Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted SaaS podcast host. I'm here with Kevin Urrutia, and he's going to correct my pronunciation of his name and introduce himself, what he's been working on, and a little bit about his history that should make us trust him as an expert in his field.
Hey Jeremy. So my name is Kevin Urrutia, and my background is software engineering. And right now I'm working on Magic Rinku, which is internal link building, and we're using AI to help you find better internal links. And the reason why I'm working on this is because back then I had tons of affiliate websites, and interlinking was like a pain in the butt. So I've always known it was annoying, and you always had to do it because it's important. And then as like websites grew, and we've had websites, so we run a few content sites still, and going back and just like the process of finding an old link is annoying, but we know it's important. But as you add more content, the ability to go back and like kind of say, hey, we wrote this article a year ago. You don't really go back there and then add an internal link to a new page. From a new page, you typically link back to an old page, but these old pages sort of don't get updated again. It kind of like happens over time, and that's kind of why. This is kind of like two things. One, it's helping you find better internal links, but it's also just saying, hey, we know we should go back to these old pieces of content and add internal links. So
I think
that's
that's
Magic Rinku, yeah.
I love that. And I like the fact it has been a sore spot in the SEO industry for a long time. And I've often struggled with the amount of time that it takes to take care of your internal links often feels outsized to the amount of budgeted time you're allowed with clients or working on a project. You're like, okay, could I create more content or am I going to try to figure out, okay, and I also kind of do this intuitively myself of like, I've been doing it for 17 years in SEO. And so I'm like, okay, I know I need to go back. I need to find something relevant to link to. And it's for me, it's just an investment of time, but I have tried to offload it to junior SEOs, to VAs and resources with very, very mixed, usually low quality results out of that. And it's also made difficult by the infrastructure of WordPress itself of, okay, if you're going to edit it, you have to go into an edit mode, and then you have to have open separately in another window or your destination that you're linking to. So you have to, at least read and consume it, have an idea of what it's about, go and find it, jump into the edit mode, figure out where you're going to edit that link, or maybe choose to add a sentence. So I've been testing out Magic Rinku on a couple of my own sites. And have been fairly pleased with the simplicity of having like a unified interface that I don't have to leave to find pages that can link to it, showing anchor text link opportunities. That's fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit about the SAS processing? You have something called Smart Links where it's using LLM tools to come up with a smart sentence to add to a paragraph within your article. Tell me about the thinking behind that process, and which AI tool you're tapping into to create those snippets.
So kind of what you said, it's like the whole process and something that like I know with these tools. So when we're giving you link suggestions, we're usually doing like the rake algorithm or like the ENG tagger algorithm, which is kind of like algorithms that Google has like put in their docs. So we basically replicated it and kind of used it, hey, in this segment that's relevant, here's a keyword or keywords that we think are relevant to like this chunk of content that we found. And it kind of what you're saying before, it's like the whole context of an old article to a new one is kind of where it's annoying. It's like you have to reread the article. It's like where in here does it fit? So we have that kind of way where it's like, hey, here's a link we think that you can link to with this anchor text using these algorithms. And then we have Smart Link. So Smart Link is kind of this kind of intermittle part of like, hey, we know this page is relevant, but maybe you as an SEO, which you should be doing, saying, hey, look, the link that I gave you isn't the right one, but I want to put in a different link. Or I don't want to put into this paragraph. let me generate another sentence to insert it after this paragraph. And with the smart link, we give you two options. One, it's like an AI anchor link, which is like, hey, look, we'll read your page and we'll read the context. What is a link that makes sense with the place you want to like do it for, inbound and outbound link? Or we give you the option to say, hey, look, let's add a sentence, but then we give you the option to force feed an anchor text saying, hey, you want this to say the best podcast. Okay, put that keyword in there, and then we'll force feed that link to make sense into this sentence that we add. So you kind of have more ability. And that's kind of where, if you look at the sidebar, we have like super easy mode, which a lot of customers use. It's just a click insert. Smart link is kind of like a little above that. And then we also have what we call like edit or advanced mode, which is basically you get the raw HTML from your WordPress site and say, hey, look, go in there and edit as much as you can. And typically we say that's for like power users that really want like a specific keyword or term, right? So I tell people like the biggest feedback that we have is kind of like, hey, like we hear from both sides, oh my God, this is so great. And two, it's, hey, these keywords aren't the ones I want. Well, it's like, well, yeah, that's why I have all these other options, because it's going to be very hard, because we all have different interlinking strategies. So that's why like I try to say, hey, look, here's a few things that you could do, but we don't limit you and saying you can't add that anchor text that you want. You can. It's just in a different option here.
That makes sense. And it goes back to kind of this theory and the strategy of using internal links for SEO at all. Okay, I have a site. I am either trying to increase indexation and crawling within my pages or structure, or I'm trying to indirectly, you know, give additional signals. A few of the folk that I work with, Michael McDougall, the Rightlink Agency, and Matt Brooks of SEOteric, they're both focused on, you know, what is the text that occurs before and after your specific anchor. They actually care less about the anchor itself and more about the context of it. So like having that smart sentence surrounded with text that's relevant to it is way better than just like name dropping in, you know, or force feeding it in a link. And it kind of comes to how wonky people want to get with their internal linking strategy, which in some cases is not at all. But if somebody's, you know, looking for an app or a solution or a SEO tool to augment their process, obviously they care about it. Obviously they've thought, you know, or have some sort of, you know, like a struggle to get that implemented. I think I saw there is a siloing option. Can you talk about your thinking behind that? What's in there now, and what else might be coming out of the siloing tool?
Yeah, so a big thing with SEO, again, going back to what you said before, it's like with interlinking, everybody's got their own like strategy, and it's like, so it's like we try to like make sure they can fit everybody's strategy. And again, going back to what you said before about like the text before, in the advanced mode, you can go in there and edit that and say, hey, I want different texts before. So then you can push it. But for the silo feature, I think silo for me, it's kind of like one of the main things of SEO that people have been doing for so long, which is like, hey, you have a pillar page and then you have like supporting pages and then you have like supporting pages underneath that. So the silo feature kind of helps you build those. So let's say you have like whatever, the best podcast. You can have that as like your main top parent. And then we will then say, hey, look, here's the silo structure that you can build. Then we give you the option to do three levels essentially. And then we will automatically find out if the silo is filled for the structure, right? One, two, and then two and two, right? So basically you have the parent and then you have about, I would say about six links pointing upwards. So we will automatically traverse down your link history to see what is filled out and where you need to go in there to complete the silo. And then that allows us to then build up the silo for you, and then you can commit all the links all at once. And so what we've seen is people use it for two ways. One is, hey, does this page have a silo that I want? Yes or no? Or do I need to add a silo? Or if I just created a brand new like pages, let me build a silo with this tool. So the thinking behind that is just like, I don't know, I think silos are still very important in SEO structure, just purely for crawlability and a pointing up the links back to the parent page that you want to really rank for. And kind of what you said before. Right now, we have like three that you could build. We have in the works advanced silos, which is kind of like the circular silos that you've seen, where it's like you have the parent, and then you point to your children, your children points to you. And I had it kind of working, and then like the code just got way too crazy. So I'm like, okay, let me keep working on that feature. Just because if you go to the silo mode, it's kind of like this. I tell people all the time, it's very simple, but there's so many things that can happen when you're building a silo that we've seen. Let's say your parent, you add your children, which is like a page, then you add a child to that page. But then you're like, wait, I don't want that page anymore. Okay, I got to remove that one. And then you have to blow out all the children because then those links don't make sense, right? So yeah. Then it's like you have to basically like it's kind of like in programming, computer science. It's just like you're basically rebalancing the tree every time. Saying, hey, now this node structure doesn't make sense anymore. Blow everything out beneath, but not above. So it's kind of all these like little things where people can do, which makes sense. It's like, hey, you know, you're thinking about it. You're like, wait, this link doesn't make sense here because now you added it here. So you're like, wait, let me go back now and edit it. So that's why this whole like circular thing is, it's not technically hard, but the issue sometimes is when we're sort of committing it to WordPress, it's kind of like, what is the order? Because you don't want to override links. And the reason why I tell people that is because WordPress updates, but if you're using like a plugin like ours, we get the update every 30 seconds based on the WordPress timer. So then we have to kind of slowly say, hey, WordPress, did you finish updating? And the reason why I say this, it's only because a lot of plugins have like, you know, all the custom WordPress editors, Beaver, Mentor, all these kind of have a different like internal clock of how your content gets updated. So then that kind of like affects how we can really push updates. So that's a little time. That's why we kind of like a little timer that I say, hey, look, based on what we've seen, it takes about 30 seconds to really get a link committed, and then we can go to the next one.
I personally like it. It's actually one of the few times where I've kind of bulk edited or done a lot of changes to my WordPress site through an external app. And it kind of makes me remember how much I hate WordPress's graphic user interface sometimes. Like, whether it's the fact that we have four or five different versions of these page builders kind of reminds us that for all the advantages of WordPress, there are also, you know, there's a reason why there are so many CMS competitors to it. But I think WordPress is an interesting animal to try to optimize for. I have to admit that I think three-fourths of all of my SEO projects have been on WordPress sites.
And,
but also at the same time, half of my, you know, biggest successes have been on SEO, doing SEO for WordPress sites.
Yeah, and the reason why we did WordPress for the plugin was kind of like, I tell people all the time, like, I've done sites and everything. WordPress, you do kind of like Shopify blogs, you do like Next.js, kind of like Markdown. WordPress is still the 40% of people use WordPress. Like, if you're building a business, it's kind of like you really have to be there because it's the most quote unquote user friendly, and it's what people choose to do. So you can't, like, for me, like, one thing I get is like, hey, I'm on my own custom blog. I'm like, I get it, but the time to develop for that one custom blog doesn't really beat the time to develop for something like WordPress, which has just so many more users, and the ability to use on WordPress just make more sense. So it's a battle, but like I tell people all the time, like WordPress kind of won the CMS battle. It's just too hard to switch out of it. But going back to what I said before about the page builders, it's just the page builders thing is just like Elementor pretty much is like the number one, right? It's like the way they store your internal data for like a plugin like ours is such an internal nightmare that you're just like, there needs to be a better way to WordPress. Be like, hey, we know there's going to be plug page builders. Let's just standardize it so because you can't switch essentially. Elementor to Beaver, it's like completely like done. Which is, if I were WordPress Foundation, you know, you would say like, hey, let's sort of standardize how the text data is stored, right? Because that for me that makes sense.
Yeah, unfortunately, Matt Mullenweg is more determined to try to bully people into giving him more money to what was his nonprofit foundation, and turns out this whole time it wasn't really a nonprofit foundation, it was Mullenweg Inc. a bit of a double cross to the WordPress contributor ecosystem, but you know, I'm glad he tricked all of us into building something awesome. So it's...
Yeah, it's a very, yeah, like I said, it's yeah, that the whole thing is just like, when I was first reading about it, it's kind of like, even for like WordPress.org, like, you know, like I'm trying to get the plugin into the official plugin store, everything there is like, hey, we're volunteering. It's like, really? No? It's like, you're volunteering. It's like, yeah, it's like a very weird language they use. It's like, hey, don't email us, or like, don't be so aggressive because we're volunteers. I'm like, I mean, at what point it's kind of like, for me, it's like, you're a big corporation. Even though you're a nonprofit, WordPress.com makes money. Like, you know, it's like WordPress.org needs to live in order for WordPress.com to make money. It's kind of like, the way I think about it, it's kind of like, you know, Tailwind, the CSS thing.
Yeah.
It's like the big Tailwind, the founder is always saying like, well, in order for Tailwind.com to make money, Tailwind, the free thing, needs to employ people. That's just how the business works. I can't expect people to like make updates for our free thing for my business to make money. It's like,
yeah,
it's just the name of the game that you're in, right? Which is like, for WordPress, I think the same. It's like, hey, if you want WordPress.com to make money, org needs obviously clearly money from the people that care about it the most, which is .com. It's like you can't really expect developers to contribute because they're just using it. You told me it's free. Why do I need to now contribute to something that you told me is free?
That makes sense. So I have a couple of questions about the SaaS side of things. I think I have a pretty good understanding of like the product offering and the position. You know, you're targeting, you know, SEOs, you want to target digital marketing agency owners who they have lots of clients who have lots of sites who want to improve their performance in SEO. They've got a lot of, you know, commercial real estate agents, and they want their content that they've created not to be orphaned, which I was really surprised when I looked at it, of like just how many orphaned blog posts that I had in my in the site, and it kind of makes sense. So just like nomenclature wise, like orphaned means like it's not really linked from any other page or post directly.
Yeah,
it might have navigational links, but it doesn't have anchor text links.
Yeah,
I think that's the sad state of most content, right?
Yeah, like I have a shrimp blog called Rare Shrimp, and I was just like, I have like 400 blog posts. And then I was like, you know, testing it with my plugin. I was like, whoa, there's 350 with no links. I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, even for me, like, even for guys like us that know SEO, we do SEO. It's like, it's just such a pain in the butt. You know, it's like, if people don't understand, it's just like going back is so annoying. Like, it's like, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, let me spend 1 hour doing it. Let me get a cup of coffee. And then you're just like, ugh. So it's like a pain. It's so annoying. Yeah.
I love that. So let's talk about your positioning as trying to get this launched as a SaaS. Was this your first time developing and launching a site as a SaaS, or have you built other tools similar to what you ended up with Magic Rinku?
Yeah, so I guess like my background is in software engineering, so I've been building stuff since I was like 18. So SaaS is like something that I've done for so long. That's why for me, like before this, I used to have like a Shopify plugin called like Metrics Box. And this is super early on. We would have like a metrics for your internal store. This is like, I would say 8 years ago, before like the metrics in Shopify were very good. And that worked really well because Shopify handles a lot of the payments for you. But in terms of those like SaaS in general, I've had like 6 to 10 ideas before that some make money, some don't make money. Some are kind of like test beds to see like what has potential. That's why I tell people at times, like, as you sort of build more companies or build more products, you can kind of see what resonates with people. Like for Magic Rinku, like I would message some people and they're like, oh yeah, I need this. It's like, there is like, you people call it like product market fit. It's like, it immediately says, oh yeah, that is a pain point. Whenas like I built other stuff and it's like, I have no clue what I would need this for. So it's like, but for you, you're just like, well, I know what the issue is. But for them, it's not like this, like, oh my God, I feel that annoyance. And I tell people at times, like, when you're building new things, you kind of, you don't know what it is until you build something that people are like, oh yeah, thanks. Like, I actually do need something like this.
Yeah, it's that, there is that market fit question or challenge. I am curious as far as like future development of it, you know, because in the SaaS game, you have a couple of choices. Like you can niche and stay focused and true within that one specific vein, or you can go horizontal and try to adopt something else and try to grow and make it into some sort of expanded platform, or you can go deeper within that one specific vein and improve and develop those aspects, which is currently the game plan for this specific SaaS.
Right now, the biggest thing that I probably want to do right now is adding more page builders. That's kind of the thing that like people are saying, "Hey, I have Beaver, sorry, I have Elementor, I have Beaver Builder, I have Gutenberg, I have Classic, but there's all these like other ones that people want." So really my biggest thing right now is like, can I get into more of those like app stores? WordPress, Shopify is a big one, and then Wix. And kind of go into like being everywhere there. One, I tell people all the time, it's just because like customers want them there, but also it's really good for SEO, just for my own site, because you're in these like plugin directories, right? So it's like you want to be everywhere where it's like, hey, here's like it's kind of goes back to what you said before about context and relevancy. It's like, hey, you're a link builder. Well, you want to be with like WordPress, Shopify, Wix, all the places that are content CMSs. So like Google knows what your app is about. So I tell people all the time, it's like it's kind of like a strategy of like product, but also you have to think about marketing. It's like it makes sense, you know.
So let's talk about your marketing strategy for this particular SaaS. What type of mix are you going for? Where are you working in outreach? What type of channels are you leveraging? Where are you spending your time on the marketing side of this SaaS?
I would say it's two things right now. One is kind of very, I tell people it's very traditional, just cold emailing. Like we basically will find, I tell people the time, like using, because we're SEO guys, just using all those advanced Google queries, WordPress, anything like that. And then I would basically go to Google, find WordPress agencies in New York, WordPress agencies in Singapore. Like, basically you build a map of like WordPress agency plus city state. And then you scrape Google, you have a scraper that goes to their website to say, hey, by the way, I'm the founder. I built this thing that might be helpful for your WordPress clients. And then I send them like a two email sequence. I just do two emails, just one introducing the product. And then the second one's like, hey, did you get a chance to see it? And then typically will someone respond like, oh, cool, let me check it out, or what is it? And then it will usually be like, hey, what's the link? Or hey, can you talk to me about it? And I'll do like, hey, let's just get a quick 15-minute demo. That way people are like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. And I think it's kind of goes back to like product market fit, when you can really describe what you're looking for. If you're like, oh, I get it, versus like, hey, you might need this thing that, it's, let me explain. It's like, hey, do you have trouble with internal linking? It's like, oh yeah. You can kind of like, if you can feel it in the first sentence, it's just so much an easier cold email. Because I know I've done cold emails for other products and it's like crickets. It's like no one's like responding. So that's kind of one part of it. And that, I don't know, I tell people of cold emailing. I tell people, some people love or hate cold emailing. I say it still works when it makes sense. It's like, hey, even for me, like it's kind of like I tell people all the time, like cold emailing works when you're right in that moment that you need that product or you're thinking about it. And that's the part about cold emailing. It's like, when do you need it? And that's why, there's so many tools like Klay that kind of are tailored for saying, hey, look, we're gonna try to find a customer that might have that problem through like LinkedIn, through Twitter, and then tell you to go outreach them, because that's when you find the hottest prospect. And that's like anything in life, right? Dating, anything, right? You're gonna find somebody when they want to date too, versus like, hey, I'm trying to find myself, right? So if everybody's trying to find themselves, they don't want to date. But if someone's like out in the market, then that's your chance to go. So I tell them the time, it's like, that's why cold emailing is kind of like a numbers game. It's like, not everybody's ready, but I tell them the time, like, you really have to keep emailing them every 6 months. And it's kind of annoying to do it because you kind of have to just do it. But if you really want to build your product and get customers, it's kind of like, oh yeah, now I need it. So that's one part. And then the next part I would say is a big one is Reddit. I tell people all the time, Reddit's a huge source of traffic for products, people looking for questions. The thing about this, it's so easy, that kind of also validated when I was building it, was that you just search for your product like keyword, internal linking. A lot of, hey, what are you using for internal links? When you see that, you should feel great because customers are saying, hey, I need this product. It's so annoying. How can I fix it? And then you just DM them and say, hey, I built this thing. You might be interested in it. Like, can we talk or check it out?
So is the game on Reddit mostly just kind of identifying, you know, those DM opportunities, which the chat interface in Reddit is particularly horrible. I'm lucky that I saw, like, your ping there, because we connected.
Yeah, that's how I found you. Yeah, that's how we connected. Yeah,
like, this interview is happening because of Reddit. But also, like, there is a challenge to authenticity in Reddit of if you're going to try to post something.
Yes.
What's been your experience there? I have had hits and misses and bonfires.
I've gotten banned from subreddits. So yeah, just because, like, it's just so hard. I would say, honestly, the best method that I've found so far is really reaching out to people that are kind of talking about your problem that you have, they have a problem, you have a solution to their problem. And they're more receptive to that. And I think that's better than kind of, like, I don't know, it's like Reddit's such a balance between authenticity plus kind of, like, you're kind of promoting your product with a little, like, far-fetched story. Like, I mean, all these, it's like, hey, here's how I made 10K in 3 months. I'm like, I've been trying to do SaaS for like a while. It's not that easy to get to 10K. It's like, you see, it's like people don't realize, like, things are a lot harder than they are, but it's just a juicy story. And then then you realize that, like, they're also shilling their own products as well. So it's like, and then it makes one go click. Yeah. So
yeah.
For me, it's like, I don't do that. Cause one, like another method that, like, I've done before, that I've tried before, it's kind of like this building in public, which is like, you share things that you're working on. Hey guys, I'm really trying to fix this feature. Here's the old way. Here's the new way. Here's kind of what I'm doing. Whereas kind of like Reddit and all these, like, building publics has kind of turned into, like, share your revenue in public. I don't know. Well, no, that's not really building in public. That's kind of like bragging in public.
But
it's
bragging, like, building
public back in the day, you know, 5-6 was like, hey guys, like, I'm just building this cool SaaS tool. Like, let me take you on the journey of, like, product features that I'm building. Where now it's like, okay, 10K this month, 15K this month. And people are like, whoa, it's like, there's no, like, learning there. So I'm not sure if you know. I'm not sure if you know the founder of WP Engine. I mean, I don't know him, but, like, Jason Cohen. Have you heard of him?
I've heard of him. I haven't met him.
I don't know him personally, but so I would say he's a really good, like, build in public guy, because he will say, hey, WP Engine is making, like, whatever, $200 million a year, but he'll accompany that with, like, a 3,000 word post on all the stuff that they've done. So it's like, you really look at that and say, hey, wow, like, there's actually thought into growth. It wasn't like, hey, here's this dumb number and now go figure out how I got there. And again, I always tell people, like, he's a very good SaaS founder, because if you look at his blog, it's kind of like detailed analysis of, like, how to think about your startup, how to grow, what to do when to give up for your startup, right? Kind of like all these questions that you have as a founder, not just like SaaS, but like any business, right? So I think he's very good there.
So do you see yourself as a SaaS founder, or do you see yourself as, you know, a startup owner? Like, how do you view this project?
Yeah, I would say, like, I've always said, like, just like a startup founder, you know, for me, I always think about, like, I'm just trying to build things that I would want myself. Like, for me, like, I use my tool all the time just because I have a pain. But I tell people all the time, like, I still really, my goal has always been, since I was, like, little, is to, like, which I kind of done before, which is, like, build a company where I have, like, 5 to 10 employees that really want to work on the products or things that we're solving, right? Because I still love the concept of working with a team, like working with a great designer, working with somebody else that is excited as you. I don't think anything beats that. It's like, you come into work and you're just like, oh man, like, let's do it. Like, when I was working in California and I worked at the startup, you know, I was like 22 at the time. It's like, we all went to work. We're all like, let's go. And it's just like so fun to just do that stuff. And I really like that energy. And again, but once you get too big, you kind of get like lost in just like the paperwork and okay, now you need PMs and now you need project manager. And then that whole excitement of like, even for Magic Rinku, it's like customer tells me, hey, Kevin, I want this feature. Okay, let me go do it. There's no like, let's go discuss it with like the three people to say like where it fits in our product roadmap. It's like, oh, yeah. God. Like, yeah. It's kind of like even doing SEO sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I worked with both Raven Tools when it was being built by John Henshaw, and we had like a team of very engaged engineers. And then after it had been bought by TapClix, and you know, like working within the product manager ecosystem to try to get, you know, feedback turned into tickets to get the development cycles, to get something put out, you know, like that entropy starts to build at a certain level. So what's the future for your SaaS when it comes to like your internal structure? Are you aiming to be like a lifestyle type company where you maximize benefits for people that you work with? You want like either a small partnership or team system that you're working with, or are you going full, you know, full Monty, aiming for, you know, CEO status and posting millions and Mullen waking out?
No, so for me, like, can you hear me? Sorry, I think my AirPods. For me right now, I think went off for a little bit. So, no, I would say for Magic Rinku, I really want to be at least 2 to 3 people max. But again, to get there, I think we need a lot more customers, a lot more revenue. But for me, that means having a designer. Then when I say another person, I mean like contractors. Like, I don't think full-time makes sense, but I would love to have contractors say, hey, look, we really want a new brand new design. Everything on there is designed by myself. I'm not a designer, but I know, like, we've all gone to websites and I'm like, wow, damn, this is so good. Like, and I really want to find somebody like that where you could just feel it. And again, with a contractor, you kind of need them because I tell all the time, like, even for us, we do get like, you're working on a feature and then you get a bug report, or like your system sends you an email saying, hey, this thing isn't working. You can really get stuck in this like loop of like 3 hours lost, and then you kind of like just backtrack. So you kind of want like a support engineer to help with these bugs, while like myself as the main like whatever engineer is working on the core features versus like, you know, fixing little things here and there. So ideally 2 to 3 people. Yeah. So I guess like lifestyle business, you know, but I think those are great. You know, you can just do whatever you want. You can just hang out. You can, you know, as a founder, sometimes it's like the freedom is the best part, but also it's the worst part. Cause sometimes you just like you don't even know what to do. It's like, you wake up, you're like, oh my God, there's so many things to do because you can do them all. But which one is the most important thing to do right now?
Definitely. Yes, prioritization when you have that freedom to do anything is challenging, both in the SEO sense, but also the owner, small business owner aspect of it. But I love hearing, you know, somebody else gung ho about having you know, a lifestyle business. I think, you know, it's my own personal politics coming in of like, if we had more people that were interested in creating, you know, businesses that, you know, give as much to their team as they individually get, you know, like building something, not necessarily just like, because I've worked for, you know, older people who are like, okay, well, you get like $16 an hour, and I'm like doing the math, like, okay, you're charging a $250 for your agency, and your rent is really low, and you're paying me what? And where's all this margin going? So maybe I'm too good at math to be a normal employee.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. It's like, for me, like, for me, at least, like, it comes from when I was working in San Francisco. Like, when I worked at the startup, us as employees, like, we got everything. New laptop, free food every day, like free coffee in the morning, free coffee at night, like great coffee. We're getting Blue Bottle. We're getting like Phil's coffee, like very expensive coffee. So like, you're like, you feel so appreciated. People don't realize like, oh wow, like you want to go into work because it feels good that your boss is like, hey, like, did you go out last night? Great. I'm happy you had fun. Versus like, why'd you go out? It's like, no, they're all, it's like, if you have fun outside of work and you have fun at work, it's like the best combination. And it just makes you excited because like, at least for me, when I was working at the startup, me and my roommate, we worked together at the same place. At night, we're just like, yo, let's just work on what we were doing at work, because what else are we going to do? It's fun for us. It's exciting. Like, we're trying to solve problems here.
I love that passion, you know, like bringing that in. Like, I don't think that a lot of like welders or, you know, get home after, you know, welding for 8 hours. You know what? Relax, I'm going to weld some more.
It's so funny because, like, I tell you all the time, like, for me, relaxing is like doing that same thing I was just doing, but like in a calmer, like in at home pace.
So kind of rounding out, like what's the messaging you want to get out there as far as reputation? I know there's a lot of like a lot of change coming because of AI, how we look at marketing. I like that your tool folds in AI, but the offering itself is not like AI forward. It's not like,
yeah,
oh,
no.
You know, we're an AI
Yeah.
tool and we blah, 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 blah. I like that it's focused on like the output, and it achieves part of that, you know, or rather large part of that through, you know, smart use of AI. I think that that's like a really good niche or a really good approach to being given these keys. How has, you know, programming development, all of this changed for you with AI capability?
Yeah, so two things with that, what you said about Magic Rinku. AI is a big part of it to help us find the context, but a lot of like the anchor text and keywords, this is why like sometimes developing like products like this is hard. It's like, one, it's like you need to put AI because people expect it now, but I'm like, the anchor suggestions are like algorithms that developed like 20 years ago. That's not AI. This is just like a method that's saying like, hey, given these keywords, give me anchor text. But then obviously we have the AI part, which is like the processing of your data, making sure we find relevant context, and then using that like keyword we get, does it make sense? So it's kind of like the AI is like a little bit back end, but on the website, you need to put AI on the front end because people are saying like, well, I only want an AI internal linker because I know those are better. It's like, okay, let's put AI there, right? We are AI, but we need to put it because, you know, you have to be forward. But the next part you're saying about like programming, honestly, I tell people all the time, like, it's a love-hate relationship. Sometimes when I'm coding, I'm like, oh my God, I can do anything now. And then you get into this mode of like, oh my God, this thing is so messy because the AI just did so much work that I have no clue what's going on. And like, it's like such a crazy fear because you're just like, I tell the time, like, even honestly, even for the Magic Rinku, the silo feature, the reason why like I couldn't add the bi-directional links is because the feature got so lost in the coding with AI that I'm like, whoa, I lost complete context of it. So I tell people the time, if you look at the URLs, they'll say like V2, because one weekend, I completely stripped it, the old one, and said, you know what? I'm going to write it myself because I need to know the context myself. Because if I want to build and enhance this feature, I need to know what's going on. And that's why I tell people, like, with AI, it's great because, one, it's sort of like, hey, here's the thing I want to build. Okay, build it. And then when you play around with it or you give it to users to play with, you start seeing all the bugs. And then you start seeing, okay, here's how I would build V2 of it. And the thing about old programming or like, you know, engineering back in the day, it's like you would spend like 6 months developing V1. And to make a V2, you're just like, you're so emotionally invested with it. And I tell people the time with AI now, this code, you sort of lose the emotional investment. So to delete it, it's just like quicker. Because you know why? You can say, you know what? AI will make me another version. There's none, like, you lose this, like, emotional attachment to the thing you're doing, which is, like, any craft. Right? I tell people, it's good and bad. Let's say you're crafting, like, a woodworking. You're attached to this piece, make sure it's perfect. But when the machine does it, you're kind of just like, okay, next piece, we'll do it again. So it's good and bad. And I tell people the time, it's like, we're really in this, like, phase of, like, okay, how much do you want to give up versus how much, like, you still need to really understand what the context is, because once you get over a certain amount, you really can't have AI do everything for you. But it's like a balance between speed and going back and be like, oh, you know what? Let's refactor this whole thing with AI, but let's do it chunk by chunk because I know where the bugs are and the features are. And now it's going to make it easier to add on top of it. I'm not sure if that makes sense. Yeah.
No, it totally does. Cause I worked for a real estate, website hosting company, and they invested so much into what was they had the 3.0 version of their platform, and this was like 2007, so it was just like basically a really fancy table system. Like it would take the logo and put it into this place in the table, and invested so much into what they called 4.0, and they're like, oh yeah, the 4.0 is going to solve this, 4.0 is going to solve that. And a guy, one of the developers, he actually worked on it offsite on his own laptop on his own hours, clocked out, and walked away with 4.0 and started his own competing company. So they were so locked into all of these product tickets and all of this that they basically just launched 4.0 is 3.0.5. And then they spent another 2 years developing, oh, it's going to be Project Blue, and it's going to solve all of our problems. And any small ticket was put on hold because they were going to make a whole new version that was going to fix it. It was just the whole problem all over again. So I could see how having the AI assistive capability to jump further, you are a lot less attached to how it worked before. But you're right, it also is the flip side. It's the duality of nature of, like, you're also less invested in it because you didn't build it from scratch, and you might not know as much about how exactly it works. So I think, yeah, it's about smart use of AI as a development tool.
It's like, even for me, it's like the my workflow for AI now is like really in this like prototyper phase of, hey, I want to build this feature. Let's spin up a brand new project and just work on that feature with AI. That way I can start seeing the bugs, the issues. And then once I say, oh, okay, and then I slowly start saying, my real project, okay, let's really do it. Okay, I know this I don't need. And that honestly has been so much better versus like, like anybody, we're just like, let's make me a plugin that does X, Y, and Z. And then you're like, well, this is broken, fix it. And you're like, I can't edit it because 5,000 lines of cut lines. And you're like, oh yeah, I don't even know where to begin now. It's like, yeah, I don't even know where to begin now either.
I think there was a horror story that came out of, like, an LLM tool, AI coding tool, deleted basically like 6 months of coding work across an
It
entire
happened to
department.
me. Happened to me before. Like, it happened to me like actually like this weekend when I was like, I had all these images for like a backup sites, and then I was like, you know what? I want to delete all the PHP files because I don't need them when I store them. And then I was like, oh, you know what? Like, you know how like you have files or like index, the HTML, question mark, the params? I was like, okay, delete those too. It deleted all the HTML files. And this is the thing though, like I'm still confused because I was using Claude Code. It deleted them, but it wasn't in my trash can. So I don't know, like it must have been doing like a different delete. Because like the guy that you're saying, I heard that story too. So for me, I was like, how is that possible? It's in your trash. But then it happened to me. And I was like, how come when I delete something, it's in the trash can? Is it doing a different type of delete? So like that's the
So
curse
how
of
do
these tools, yeah.
the curse you can build much more faster, but it's got its dangers. I have, I've used AI tools. I've used Claude, to do things like edit interviews that afterwards, and it will lie to me about what it has done and continue lying. Like, okay,
It
there's
does
a
that in code
section.
too.
I know that I talked to him about this specific subject. Did you add it? Yes, I added it. It's not there. Like,
No,
convincing the
it's
machine that it is lying is
and
sometimes
that's the
is hard.
and I tell you that's sometimes like the funny part, because you're just like, you spend so much time fighting with it that you're just like, should I just done it myself? Like sometimes you're just like, oh my God, this is 3 lines of code, but you spend 3 days, like 10 minutes fighting with AI to be like, just like, no, it's not there, it's here. And then you're just like, then you lose that ability to type, which is so insane for the programmer. Like the typing of the code is like gone now.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that that's going to be, an industry issue as the next generation of people who are trained that this is how coding is in partnership or tandem with AI code? Is there actually going to be enough incentive for developers to actually know how to code in the way that you absolutely brutally, like, that was the hardest thing, was knowing this
Knowing
whole
the
library and,
code,
like, yeah, is that just getting lost?
and I think it is too. And the reason I tell people that too is because, like you read about it too, code, like languages, why were they made? One, it's because it's for programmers, for humans. But now, you don't really need that if an LLM can just really write the machine code, like because it understands that all these programming languages are just translations. So we're just putting translations on, like, assembly, C, C++. Then, like, I use Ruby. Like, Ruby is like 4 layers deep, but the LLMs can really go to like C and write like the best optimized code, the best C code, because it's these knows these libraries around. So it's kind of like, I tell all the time, it's like maybe that like, there's going to be a different language for LLMs, whereas that like, you want to program something, you don't need these like Ruby languages or PHP or JavaScript, because you can really go to the core language. And again, you could already use English, which we all know, because kind of like we said before, why can't people program? Because they don't know the language, but everybody knows English. We all know, hey, I want to make a pop-up come up that says first name, last name. Okay, great. Let me go do that. Right. So I just think like the whole like programming itself is going to change. But on the other hand, you're still going to need like these hardcore programmers, I would say. They're doing C, like FFmpeg for like video coding. Like these are like this super like detailed like language, like things that like I think you need to be in the weeds to do. So you know, it's funny because when I was doing web development, I've always been like, you know what? I want to do web development because I love programming, but I'm not a hardcore programmer that can do like Linux, that can do like C. Those are just too hard for me. And then that's why I did web development, because like, it was hard enough, but easy enough for me to understand. And that's why I gravitated towards it. But now it's like, well, like, I don't know. It's like, for me, it's great because like I can move even faster. But I don't know. I think it'll change sometime soon. It's kind of like a hard thing to know because I can see it changing. And it's kind of like I'm in that wave. And then some days I get excited about it because I'm like, oh, I can do anything. But something like, wow, kind of what you're asking. It's like, you know what? Like, I see this like vision where maybe like I'm not going to be needed sometime soon. So, yeah. Yeah, so it's like
I think for the moment you definitely are needed. I'll add links to the show notes for Magic Rinku. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything coming up? Any other interviews you're doing or webcasting, or if you're on LinkedIn or I guess Reddit, where can people interact with you and find out more if they have questions?
Yeah, they can just email me at, you know, my email, rutia.kevin, or Twitter. I'm active on Twitter. So twitter.com/Danest, D-A-N-E-S-T, or x.com now. So, but anything coming up too is like, I'm really like, going back to what you said before, I really am going to be working on starting a new podcast about kind of just like building a SaaS in public with like, because for me, like I've always loved those podcasts. So that's something I want to do now with another friend that I have that is also building his own SaaS. So kind of like a back and forth to talk about, hey, what we're building and kind of what we did for the week.
Awesome. I'll make sure to include a link to that in the show notes as well. Thanks so much for the interview, Kevin.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.